This is the Out of Time Film Podcast, where your hosts, Tom and John, discuss everything from blockbuster films to TV and games like there's no tomorrow. Hello and welcome to the Out of Time Film Podcast. I'm Tom.
I'm John.
And this week we are talking about Mickey 17.
The last time I've seen the work of Bongino was Parasite, 2019, years ago, which is insane to think about. And that completely blew my mind, how he made a film that was purely terrifying, but has this interesting perspective on class. There's that class divide that he explored in Parasite. Fantastic movie, absolutely fantastic. And then here we have Mickey 17, which the weird thing about this is that it was supposed to come out, I believe, a year ago. Yeah, it was a year ago that it was supposed to come out. There was a lot of delays surrounding this movie, which is strange because Bong Joon-ho won Best Picture for Parasite and he has made such an incredible movie. But then Mickey 17 just got so many delays and I'm really intrigued about what happened, you know, for this production, this movie. But here we are, Mickey 17, and I thought it was pretty good. What about you, Tom?
I agree. I think this film was pretty good. It's interesting, actually, because I think that this film might have gone into production in 2021, 2022.
Yes.
We had that image of Robert Pattinson for ages. That was actually all
in that tube, just lying backwards. It's like the same thing with Martin Scorsese with like Killers of the Flower Moon with the same image. Imagine that's like the trend now. They would just release one image of a movie.
They did it for Spider-Man 2, the game as well.
They did.
It was just the image of Peter and Miles. And if you remember, years ago, they did it for Rogue One as well. Like, we only had one image of the cast. So it's not uncommon, but as you say, this film was pushed back. I think you're right. I think maybe it was 2024 originally. And this film has been pushed back and brought forward as well. It was going to release in April of 2025, but we're actually getting it in March instead. It swapped release dates with Sinners, the upcoming Ryan Coogler film, which is very interesting. I don't really know why. March is a very interesting time for cinema because you always get movies that do pretty well, but because of the landscape, they are kind of forgotten, especially when it comes to awards. And as you said, Bong Joon-ho, Parasite won Best Picture. It was an incredibly lauded film. And you would think that this one would be put in December or November to maximize those award conversations. But films that come out in March or February never really do very well. I mean, look at the Academy Awards this year. Challengers, Dune Part 2, mostly forgotten when I think a lot of people, myself included, would consider them among the best of last year. So I don't know why it's released now. I truly have no idea.
It's absolutely confusing.
Yes.
And as you said, there is that, it's just this month that makes people forget about amazing movie that comes out in March. I wonder if it's like some zone when people forget about all the movies ever and like, yeah, let's go on to Fast and Furious 10, which came out in April.
March is actually time locked. And so you can't interact with it after the events have passed.
What if it's like Severance? Like when they go into March, they have to sever the whole month of March and they forget about it. They're just like, oh, what movies do we watch in March?
That's actually an interesting study. If you look at awards and even box office, like what actually is the worst month? Because it kind of makes sense that it would be March because there's no massive blockbusters. Awards movies get forgotten. Sure, you do have stuff like June, but really the big blockbusters come in starting April. That is fascinating. This film was distributed by Warner Brothers and Warner Brothers are in shambles these days. You know, there's no two ways about it.
Yeah.
I don't have my phone on me, John, so I'm giving you this task. What was the budget of this film?
Oh, it's $118 million.
Is that 18 or 80?
18.
Oh, right. Okay. You know what? That's actually not too bad. I thought this was more expensive. We do actually next week have a film coming up by the Russo brothers that is astronomically expensive.
No, are you talking about the Electric State?
I'm talking about the Electric State, yes.
No, it's not $220 million or something.
$320 million.
Okay, well, I wonder where the money went for that movie.
Yeah, we are going to cover that in the coming week.
Tune in.
Actually, this film, I guess, it doesn't actually need as much money as I thought. I don't know how big the marketing push has been, but I haven't really heard a lot of people talking about this. It's just interesting that the follow-up to Parasite, a film that made history in the awards circuit, a film that was incredibly well reviewed and very popular, is going to be something that I honestly have no idea where this will go. This is a film about Mickey, who is on a space expedition to a new planet, and he is an expendable, which means that he is basically used to test all of the scientific equipment. They will test viruses on him, and he will go into places where there's radiation, and he will do all the dangerous things, because every time he dies, he is reprinted and will just live again. And we follow Mickey 17, the 17th one. And already that's a very fascinating concept. I thought this film was very Bong Joon-ho. It was exactly kind of what I would expect from him. It's incredibly zany and ridiculous, and it balances its tones excellently. You will go from something really harrowing to something that is pretty funny and not really that serious. He always does those quite well. I thought this film was very similar to Snowpiercer. I thought it had a lot of shades of Okja in it, which I think are his other two major Western films. But I think it is very different to Parasite. I think people who go into this film only having seen Parasite will be surprised.
I haven't seen Snowpiercer or Okja or the rest of his works, but it really surprised me of how it really balanced the comedy, but also the harrowing reality of the world that Mickey has gone into. And it does feel very zany, but it's the harsh reality that just doesn't make sense. Like, for example, we have Mark Ruffalo as this horrible leader whose name is Kenneth Marshall, and it echoes a lot of today's political climate. You know what I'm talking about with this guy. I hate him. Not Mark Ruffalo. He's good.
Mark Ruffalo. I mean, I tell you what, with Poor Things last year and this year,
yes.
I love my yearly dose of Mark Ruffalo being just a little freak, a little weird freak.
A little freak. Just a freaky Mark Ruffalo every year. Imagine it's like the Academy, just like, we have two freaky Mark Ruffalos. Just like,
and the award for the freakiest man for the second year running is Mark Ruffalo again.
Yeah, and it's like this caricature, and it's very satirical of today's political climate. And it doesn't feel right, but it does. You know, like when you watch the movie and it's like, oh damn, this is like what is actually happening. It echoes Don't Look Up as well. Like,
yeah, thing. Honestly, I was scared at how accurate this film was. Now, it's based off a book called Mickey 7, written by Ashton Edward, and I haven't read it. I have no idea the similarities, the differences. This was written by Bong Joon-ho, so I think that it's pretty much just the concept they're taking here, maybe some of the echoes of the plot, but it's not an exact adaptation of the book. But as I said, this film was in production from 2021, 2022, and my God, there are scenes in this that are like, sorry, Mr. Bong, but you have predicted the future here. There is a particular scene.
Yeah.
We'll get into it in spoilers, but there is a particular scene that echoes a certain part of Donald Trump's presidential campaign.
Yeah.
And I watched it and I was like, oh my God, that is literally what happened. And that's in 2024. Like, that is something that I don't know if you know what scene I'm talking about here, John.
I do know what you're talking about.
Yeah. Okay. With the...
Yes, of course, okay. Yeah.
And you just kind of think to yourself, like, what? Like, you got the circumstances so right. And there is so much, as you said, there's so much in this that is satirical of current politics. Mark Ruffalo is a very Trumpian figure. Even the way that the people around him, the following that he has, it's almost cult-like. It's incredibly passionate. It's incredibly intense. I even think people wear caps with his slogan on. I think it's the one and only, which, again, it's really on the pulse. Tim Key's there, the British comedian. I don't know if you noticed that, John. I was just like, what are you doing here?
He just appeared out of nowhere. He's like, oh, there he is. There he is.
He was in a pigeon costume for most of the time. It's so weird. Any Brit, if you see a British comedian in like a big American movie, it's so jarring. It's just like, what? It's why are you jarring. Here?
Because it's like, are they playing a caricature of the British, or are they actually being themselves or in a pigeon costume? And anyways, that was very jarring. I didn't expect that at all. But yeah, the idea of this satirical style is interesting. Does Bong Joon-ho use this in his other works?
Snowpiercer less so. Snowpiercer is a very gritty film, but Okja definitely. And there are elements in this film that are so reminiscent of that, and the treatment of animals and of less intelligent beings. I think the argument that Bong Joon-ho, clearly it's something that he cares about a lot, animal life and human treatment of those that we deem to be below us. There is a whole section of this film with the animal life on the planet that they have come onto, and this idea of who owns it the land and what right do we have to come in? There's one point when Mark Ruffalo, as this very Trumpian caricature, says, they are aliens. And another character says, you moron, we're the aliens. You know, they were here first. We have no entitlement on this land. It's very interesting stuff. It's very current stuff. It's very relevant, but it's very universal. So I do think that this is the kind of thing that Bong Joon-ho likes to do. And Okja is a film that will make you laugh in one scene and the next scene you will feel sick. And I think that this film has a lot of that as well.
Yeah, it's just the tones that just, it kind of feels like you're on this emotional roller coaster all the way through. It just plays around with the emotions with the audience thinking, this is very nice, you know, with Mickey, this is very wholesome. Like with Mickey and Nasha.
Nasha, Dennis the Menace's dog. Yeah. What?
I was literally about to say that. Like, wait, Mickey and Nasha? Nash.
This is the character played by Naomi Aki. And every time Mickey would say Nasha, I was like, oh no, this doesn't... Okay, what we're discovering here is that as Brits watching this movie, we find a whole different perspective with Nasha and Tim Key.
We're like, oh my God, this is a whole new perspective. This is all new. Oh my God. But again, kind of like the tones, like you're trying to figure out what is going on. Why are you feeling like this? Why we happy, but then we're sad at the moment. Like one time Mickey's getting tested, but then the next scene would be Mickey and Nasha being together, and that's just wholesome. These are just two stark contrasts. It's just fascinating how he does that, Bong Joon-ho, like how he just plays around with the visual elements but with emotions and how characters can be in such dire situations.
On the visual element as well, see, I thought this film was had a much higher budget, and it's even more impressive that the budget wasn't 200 million or above. I mean, obviously 118 million is no small budget, but still, I absolutely loved the production design of the planet and the surface, and also all the quarters they live in. It's dark, it's dingy. I wasn't a massive fan of the lighting. I thought quite often the lighting didn't do a lot for the faces. Sometimes I just couldn't, you know, massively see. It wasn't always the most kind of complimentary. I understand what it's going for, but I think sometimes natural light isn't always the way to go. But still, the film generally looks really good, especially the set design was just incredible. The human printer, as you mentioned earlier from that very first image, but the human printer that Mickey frequently comes out of looks amazing. That whole effect. There's some really good blend of visual effects and practical effects as well with the creatures that they meet that they call creepers. Again, I couldn't help but think about Minecraft. I was like,
yeah, same. I was like, oh, creepers.
Yeah, I feel like somebody should have been on Bong's team and been like, okay, hold on. There's a dog called Nasha. There are green things called creepers. We should maybe rename some of this stuff. Maybe it's in the book, I don't know. But I thought all of that was amazing.
I agree.
We have some incredible performers as well. Mark Ruffalo isn't the only freaky man, because Robert Pattinson loves to play a little freaky man, and he loves
he does a weird
accent. That's so much fun. If anyone's
anyone's
seen The Boy and the Heron, you know that Robert Pattinson does an amazing freaky voice, and it carries into this film. I thought it was amazing just to see him have fun.
I'm sorry, it's just the way that he's like, oh, has anyone listened to his freaky voice in The Boy and the Heron, or in Mickey 17. Yeah, there's true dedication right there, you know, from him. Just like, yeah, I'll put on the voice. He's like, you know, with Batman, he's like, I'll put on the voice, but it's the freaky voice.
Yes. Like, there was a moment in this film where he went a little bit Batman, I thought. He's kind of like, standing over a massive incinerator that's full of lava, and he kind of has a little Batman moment, and I was like, oh, okay. But Steven Yeun is also in this film, and also, I thought, played a little freaky guy. It's very odd. I think this is a film of freaky men, and
I'm seeing a pattern here, Tom. I'm seeing something that it's all about the freakiness. This is funny because we talked about Poor Things, and that's a very freaky film,
right?
And here we have something. Is it the freaky effect?
No, like, genuinely, it's a bunch
of... Is it Mark Ruffalo?
It could be. It could... No, it's definitely Mark Ruffalo.
It's the anomaly. It's the anomaly that we cannot believe.
No, genuinely, it's this thing of freaky people, because Mark Ruffalo's character's wife as well, Toni Collette, also a little freak. Like, all she cares about is sauce, and she wants to make, like, the perfect sauce. And it's like, mate, I love mayonnaise as much as the next man, but I'm not that bothered about sauce. And then Nasha, Naomi Aki's character, is also, like, weirdly bloodthirsty. I just thought it was really interesting. But there's also this statement to be made about the people in power and the people downtrodden, all kind of running around like headless chickens, and only a couple of them actually have the power, actually know how to use other people. Mark Ruffalo is an idiot. The Trump stereotype is a moron. But actually, it's his wife behind him who's whispering in his ear, who is pulling the strings. She's the smarter one, but she's not as in the limelight. You can draw numerous real-world parallels there. But, you know, also, Mickey isn't the smartest guy, you know, Mickey 17. But Nasha is the one to kind of take control and questioning the system, especially as we go on. I really enjoyed all of the dynamics. Although I was much more interested in the politics and the political satire than I was in the kind of rom-com elements of it. There is a certain love square. It's not a love triangle. It is a love square in this film.
Yeah.
For me, that was the least interesting part of the film. I was much more engaged in the Mark Ruffalo stuff, the alien stuff, than I was in the rom-com. I think if it was focused on more, I would have enjoyed that rom-com aspect kind of going throughout.
But Tom, this is a freaky film, you just said. This is rom-com and stuff like that.
Rom-coms can be freaky too. Let rom-coms be freaky, damn it.
Oh my god, that should be like on your banner, just like on
I'm running
like,
for committee lead. Rom-com
has to be freaky.
Good.
Wow.
Okay. Right. Okay. Yeah. Spoilers.
Spoilers.
Yes. I recommend this film. It's a bunch of fun and it's got a lot to say. So yeah, go see it.
Go see it. It is very good. What was the one spoiler? I forgot it now because we just went on to a different.
Oh come on! I think it's fairly obvious. It's the early one. You know the one.
What early one?
You know the one?
No, just remind me, man.
There's two Robert Pattinsons in this movie.
Oh, yeah, there's two Robert Pattinsons in this movie.
Because Mickey 17, everyone thinks he's dead. Yeah, but he's alive. And so they actually print another one. So there are two.
Yes.
And that's a really interesting concept. Every Mickey is slightly different. So it's Mickey 17, as I said, he's the little freaky guy. He's kind of timid. But Mickey 18 is the grizzled Batman who is,
Batman.
He wants to get things done and is more angry at the system. There's a moment when Mickey 18's like, tell me you gave that bastard everything. And he was like, I thanked him for dinner. And he's like, you fuck. Like, I thought that was really fun. Their dynamic.
I do have to say about that, that was very intriguing about their inner conflict. What they feel all the way through, because in the movie Mickey feels like he deserves this punishment. Was this some divine intervention that's punishing him or something? And he feels like this because when he was young he was in his mother's car. I think it was like a really expensive car, but there was like a big red button that you pressed and that caused a car accident, and he feels this self-hatred for himself, like he doesn't deserve anything. That's what he feels like, and he escapes the planet for other reasons, but I feel like that is also a main reason why he just wants to get away from things, as he just doesn't want to feel that pain anymore. But you still get punished as an expendable. He does get to all the tests, and it's just really morbid. It's so morbid. Yeah. But then that arc is really beautiful when there is that talk at the end where Mickey 17 feels he's still getting punished for that, and then Mickey 18 says it wasn't your fault, and it was mom's terrible driving, I think, or something that led to a car accident. I think it was something in the mechanics of the car.
Yeah,
not the mom's terrible driving. I want to take that back. I misheard.
It was all the mother's fault.
Oh my god, the mother's fault.
Here's a question.
Batman.
Would you push the button? If you're like 7 years old. Yeah, I would push the button, 100%.
Yeah, I would push the button.
You know the button on a car, the red triangle that makes like the lights flash and the alarm go?
Yes.
I pushed that when I was a kid.
I pushed that too.
Yeah, come on,
of course,
man.
I do. Because back then, I was stupid. We were stupid. We were like, oh, yeah,
I still am stupid. How dare you?
Okay, it's okay, Tom. It's okay. I'll get you a button.
Oh, that's what we need on the podcast. Just a button, just to click randomly all the time.
Yes, neither. That, yeah.
It's actually an ejector seat. Just get me out of here.
ejector seat from Too Fast, Too Furious.
Yo!
Ejector seat, yo!
I love it. The thing about Mickey 17, 18 is that they are two sides of the same human, the same kind of feelings. It's like the angel and the devil. They represent the twin sides of Mickey's own anxiety or confidence, and I really enjoyed that whole dynamic. And the film can get really gruesome and horrible when you see him being exposed to all this stuff, the way that human life is treated. Again, you kind of can see it, you can see the world going that way in the future. There's so much of this film that I think this kind of predicts what is about to happen, because the whole concept of expendables, it is outlawed on Earth, but Mark Ruffalo's character wants to use everyone beneath him. You see it in the way that he acts, in the way that he speaks to people, in the way that his quarters are so nice and so lavish, but the quarters of the working people are so horrible and dingy. That's a very Snowpiercer-esque concept as well. again, it's like you said earlier, Parasite is all about class. Bong Joon-ho loves to explore class. And the way that we look at death and the value of it and the value of life.
Yeah.
I thought it's really, really interesting. And there is a harrowing moment when this poor defenseless creeper is gunned to oblivion, literally like a dozen people shoot it until there's nothing left. And we see it in such painful detail. This poor baby creature getting killed by humans who are just scared of it and want to assert their power and the dominance. It's so horrible. And there are scenes where we see them torture these animals and cut them up. Like Toni Collette literally chops like the tail off one of them to make some sauce. And it's so stupid. The human trivialities, the things that we do for no good reason, and we're harming others. Because why? I don't even know. But yeah. So much of that was on the pulse. So much of that I can see in today's political conversation. The thing that I mentioned earlier is Mickey 18 tries to shoot Mark Ruffalo, but yes. Misses and just grazes him across the cheek. And it's literally just like the assassination attempt on Trump, and the way that Mark Ruffalo handles that and makes himself into some sort of martyr. The way that everything is filmed and everything is done as almost this performance to show people, to assert this power. There's this whole thing at the end where they're like, okay, Mark Ruffalo is going to go to the head of the creepers and make this speech about human power and about not surrendering and not giving in, and they're going to film the whole thing. And it's like, it's more important that they film it than them actually taking any thought about what they should be doing. I thought that was all so very good.
Yeah, and what I find so fascinating is that Bong Joon-ho actually makes a very entertaining movie, but it has really deep philosophical, satirical, and consumeristic ideas about the world today. What's interesting about those consumeristic ideas about food, with rations as well, people going to space as well to escape from Earth, which is a really interesting microcosm, as we see Mickey's in that building, and then you don't really see Earth, but you see loads of people queuing up to go to space, which is like a terrifying thing. Is like, what happened to Earth? Did something terrible happen? And it's just so fascinating just to hear or see something around it that makes you feel unease, or the clones as well, like using clones for being experimented on.
They literally punish people by taking away their calories, by taking away and doubling their work. The thing that they use to control people with is food. There's a point where Mark Ruffalo is like, yes, we're going to outlaw sex because that uses up too much of our precious calories. And everyone's like, oh no. And he's like, but when we get there, we're all going to have sex. And everyone's like, yay. And it's like, what? It makes no sense. Like he literally talks about wanting to make the perfect white race, the perfect pure human race. And it's genuinely like, look at some politicians now and you see the exact same thing. This yeah. is like, it's no longer satirical, it's no longer point and laugh, it's actual real yeah. dystopia that we're seeing in our real world. And it's just like, what?
It's mad. It's absolutely mad. And this film, this is what I've been trying to say at the beginning of the episode, is like the production. This was supposed to come out in 2024 or earlier, perhaps. And it just feels so odd that it's in the right time.
How did he know?
I don't know. It's definitely telling us something. This is like a wake-up call. Yeah. Most definitely a wake-up call to today's world. So do go see the film.
Yeah, I think yeah. this is important for that reason. People should see it because there is so much to liken to this world and to go, well, this film is obviously has elements of parody in it. It has elements of making it, you know, a bit sillier than it needs to be. But because of where we are in the world, it's not just silly anymore. It's kind of accurate. It's kind of true. What does Bong know? I don't know. I don't know if I want to know what he knows. What oracle came to him and gave him all this information, but it is scary.
This is like, this is silly to me.
Like, oh, what a beautiful wow. guy. What are you going to give this film out of 10?
8 out of 10.
Me too. 8 out of 10. Thank you everybody for listening. If you're listening on YouTube and you liked it, you can like and subscribe if you want to see more. And if you're listening on Spotify or Apple, you can follow and give us a 5-star review if you think we're worthy. And next week we're going to be doing Snow White, the original 1937.
Oh, great.
Yes, and you can follow us on Instagram at Out of Time Film Pod to see our incredible thumbnails from Zane Asphalt on Blue Sky for more thoughts from Tom and me, and TikTok to see edited clips, which are all also on Instagram Reels and YouTube Shorts. And you can find links to that all in the description below. Thanks to Elgin Smith for the excellent theme and Roland Phillips for vocals of always. And I think that's everything. Take what you're given.
Give nothing back.
Goodbye.
Goodbye.